Hello, hello everyone, and welcome back to the EcoVibes podcast, where we have interactive conversations on environmental topics with people from across the world. I'm your host, Khadija Stewart, and this is where we talk all things climate change and ocean conservation. Welcome to the Youth for the SDGs special edition series in partnership with Peaceboat US, dedicated towards the UN Ocean Decade of Science. The Youth for the SDGs program is a unique experiential learning and capacity building program for young activists and scholars engaged in SDG-related initiatives from the US and around the world. Youth programs take place on board voyages conducted by Peaceboat, traveling on a large passenger ship that sails regionally and globally, conducting education and advocacy programs focusing on nuclear disarmament, climate action, and sustainability with partner organizations and communities around the world. Youth for the SDGs programs average 2 weeks in length, where participants visit 3 to 5 countries, and all programs include onboard activities such as presentations, workshops, cultural activities, and port activities, where we participate in specialized experiential study programs with NGOs, academic institutions, governmental entities, and communities working to address SDG-related issues such as climate change and sustainable development. Today, we head to the USA to chat with Amy Harif. Welcome, Amy.
Thank you. So excited to be here.
Yeah, so with this season, I've been starting off every episode with like rapid fire questions, but I didn't have time to get questions today. So we're going to switch things up a little bit, and we're going to play a quick game of two truths and a lie, right? And since you're a guest, you can go first.
Oh, great. Okay, so I have to give you two truths and a lie, and you have to guess which one. Ooh,
yeah.
Okay. Well, let's see. One of my truths or lies. When we were in the Arctic, we got to see a polar bear. The second one would be I have made costumes from recycled materials. The third one would be, let me think about this really quickly. I got to swim in, let's see, I was going to say actually two lies, so maybe I shouldn't do that third one. that wouldn't be off the good side. Let's see, the third one would be that I got to speak with people from the seed vault.
I feel like it's between the first one and the third one. And I feel like if you guys saw polar bears, like, I definitely would have heard about that.
So you I'm going right. to go with I did not get to see polar one. Bear. We did get to see a caribou, a reindeer, one of the Svalbardic reindeers, which was really cool. I really wanted to see a polar bear.
Dasher and Dancer.
I know. Prancer, I love it. Keep going.
Sorry.
no, we didn't get to see one, unfortunately. But we did have a polar bear stuffed animal for our trip, which I believe that you also had.
Yeah, I think it had a name. I can't remember its name.
I feel like I'm not doing our trip justice now that I don't remember their names. But we did, so I guess we kind of could say that we did see one, a polar bear, right? Just not a living one. Now, is it your turn?
That's very true. That's very true. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to go real quick. I should have been thinking about this while you were speaking, but I wasn't. But since you kind of was on the team of the voyage, I'll go with that. So, I fell on stage while giving my presentation on climate change and Trinidad and Tobago. We got to taste honey that was made from bees raised in a mangrove. And we all threw one of the members of the boat whilst in the mangroves of Guatemala.
Ooh, this is hard. you're much better at this than I was. how about the second one? It's either the second or the third, I think.
What was it?
The first one, I think, has to be, you definitely fell on stage, and I want to hear that story.
No, I can't even remember. What was the second thing I told you?
The second one was the bees in the mangrove, the honey.
Oh.
That was true? Oh, my God.
No, that was true.
So then the third one.
That is true. Right? Yeah, the third one.
The first one you didn't fall in.
That's also true. Yeah.
Oh, well, I'm really happy for you.
No. No.
That's awesome. That was just a very believable story, so well done.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so guys, that was Two Truths and a Lie. I hope now that, you know, you're invested in the podcast, so let's jump into things now. So let me read out Amy's bio. Amy Half is a force of nature consultant, climate researcher, and artist. She was recently selected to be a youth ambassador for the UN Ocean Decade, where she led workshops and gave speeches to over 2,000 participants aboard the Peace Boat. In August 2023, she completed the prestigious Thomas J. Watson Fellowship to conduct 1 year of independent research on how creativity can catalyze climate and environmental action. For her research, she spoke and worked with over 350 scientists, community leaders, academics, CEOs, and artists to see how creativity and storytelling can be tools for change. Amy has been an ad judge for Bowsuit Ocean Awareness and has also spoken at Goldsmiths Art and Ecology Conference and at the New York Climate Week. She is currently creating an illustrated book from personal interviews with 25 international female climate leaders, including Christina Figueres, Dr. Kim Combe, to name a few. Her creative pursuits include facilitating community murals in Zambia, New Zealand, and Indonesia, creating costumes from trash for Taiwan's Dream Community Festival, and drawing large illustrations about projected climate impacts in her community. Let me just say, Amy, I love all of it.
I was going to apologize for making you read that mouthful. That was quite a lot. But thank you.
No, but it's so great. And I also feel like it's so fitting that you're on the Eco Vibes podcast, because like everything that I read here is exactly what I've been trying to do with Eco Vibes, you know, getting creativity into the space of climate action and climate awareness and storytelling. I mean, this whole podcast is about storytelling, right? Sharing youth stories from across the world. So,
well, I have to tell you, I started my research for the Watson Fellowship, and I was really focused on art and, you know, different forms of art, but really primarily visual art. And over the course of the year, I saw how important storytelling was, you know, not just as, you know, using art, but also music and performance and, of course, the written form as well. And that made me focus more on storytelling over the course of that year. So I think that you're really on to something there. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, like it's so important. And like I always say when people ask me like why I feel storytelling is important, etc., it's just like, you know, for me as a, I would call myself an academic of some sort, just because I love studying. And, you know, but for me, sitting down and reading scientific papers, like I can do it, you know, but there's a lot of people that can't connect to the information in that form. And storytelling, all the different art forms that you mentioned, is a great way to relay that information.
Exactly.
And everybody learns differently. You know, there's visual people, there's musically inclined people, etc. So it's so important that we tap into all these different creative tools to make sure, as well as the traditional, you know, to make sure that we get the message out there as much as possible and help drive climate action. So I'm so glad that you're doing all this amazing work. And like, I don't even know where to start, but I feel like I'm gonna start with like what, you know, really drove you to be creative in the climate space, because you could have been operating in any other space, but you chose environmental and climate change.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I want to know why.
So I think that there's two main narratives in my life, and you know, the one is spending a lot of time in nature and learning about nature. And I was very lucky to be able to like go walk to school pretty much every single day. And from that, and spending time with hiking, and then it turned like mountain biking and whatever kind of could come my way, I learned a lot more about what's going on in nature. And with that, that I studied at Hamilton College and studied environmental studies and focus on environmental justice and climate change. And over the course of, you know, just developing this strong connection to nature and, you know, the outdoor world, I started to care a lot more for it. And then the other narrative is that I grew up doing a lot of art as well. And so one of my favorite stories to tell along that is my sister is always making art, and she's 3 years older than I am. And so I could not draw, you know, at the age of three, I could barely hold a pencil, you know, but I remember have a vivid memory of her, you know, drawing these beautiful things and then me like standing right next to her and just trying to copy exactly what she was doing. And that was, you know, most of my childhood was trying to do what my sister was doing in the art world. And now we're both artists in different ways. But I think that over the course of college in particular, I was studying art and studying science. They're on opposite sides of the campus. Everyone was like, why are you studying these two things? They're completely different. And for me, I was like, well, what if art, you know, the way that I express myself is through art, but what I really care about is science and environment and, you know, the climate crisis. So how can I use this tool that I have to address issues that are really important to me? And that's how it started. And then I kind of just went down the path and saw that there were so many other people who were doing this in, you know, all around the world in different ways. And since then, I've just been focused on that ever since. So
I absolutely love it. And like part of me, like I wish that I, like when you said you were 3 years old and you couldn't hold a pencil properly and you couldn't draw, like I'm 31 and that's still my reality.
No, I'm a firm everyone's an artist, or, you know, everyone can be creative. It's just, we express it in different ways. You know, I couldn't be a podcast host. So, or, you know, I haven't tried that. Maybe you haven't, you know, practiced holding a pencil long enough. But I guess it sounds like we can learn a lot from each other. So no worries there.
True. But I absolutely, when I tell you, I absolutely love using art in everything that I do. And I really wish that I could be showcasing my own work, but that's not, you know, that's not the case. And that's not the role for me right now. My role is to create spaces for other people to do it. And I'm fine with that. You know, I had 2 exhibitions earlier this year, one in January in Trinidad, and then one in July to like raise awareness on deep sea mining and connect people to the reality of the deep ocean and climate change and all these different things. So, you know, like, I feel like I'm going to call myself a creator. Yeah. That's what it's called, right? Yeah, right. And then as a creator, talking to an artist, this is incredible.
I'd love to hear more about those. I don't know if that's for another conversation or not, but I'm assuming that was with SOA, and, you know, the work that you all are doing with the deep sea mining has been really inspiring to me, and it wasn't something that was really on my radar before Peace Boat, because I didn't know much about SOA beforehand. And so, you know, now after meeting you all and meeting the other people who are affiliated with SOA, I've been really impressed by what you all are doing. And, you know, it's such an important topic that I feel like people don't really think about much. So
it's completely like going under the radar and stuff, and we could definitely keep that for our next episode. Or actually one of the other ambassadors who was on the LATAM voyage with me, he's gonna be talking all about deep sea mining, because that was like our that's job on the voyage in a nutshell. Where was I going with this? Right. But on a separate time, we will talk all about the exhibition and like future exhibitions I have planned, because I have big dreams, big goals, especially for the UN Ocean Decade Conference next year. I want to do a whole big exhibition and thing there as well.
Awesome.
So we will definitely talk about that. After this. But I'm really interested in the your fellowship work. Where is it? Yeah, on the research that you did on how creativity can catalyze climate and environmental actions, and how you spoke to over 350 scientists, community leaders, academics. Like, that's a lot of people. But from your conversations that you had, I want to know, like, what was like a common trend or theme or biggest revelation from these conversations?
I think you know, it sounds like a lot of people, 350 people, but that was over the course of a year. And I was very fortunate to be able to travel to 7 countries on 5 continents for this research. And so, I mean, it could have been more than 350 people. At some point, I kind of stopped counting. But essentially, what I was trying to see was, my initial question was, you know, can art change the world and how? And obviously, I'm not biased. Obviously, I am biased because I'm an artist. And so I wanted to see if this tool that I have can be used to make a difference in the climate environmental space. And when I started out the year, I was pretty emotionally attached to the question. And I realized pretty soon on that art maybe can't have as strong of an impact as I thought or I hoped that it could. However, mm-hmm. In that original context and what I was looking for, maybe it wasn't as strong, but I've realized over the course of this year that art can do so many more things than I'd originally thought. So, for example, I had focused my art thesis in college on how art can be an educational tool. And so I'd created large-scale illustrations about how climate change is projected to impact my community and was trying to, you know, use these illustrations to draw people in and make them curious about the art, and then they would read about the science. And maybe to persuade some of the people who there's a lot of really conservative people in the area where I went to school, and I was hoping to maybe reach them in a way that's, like, mm-hmm. less confrontational. And over the course of this year, I felt like education is one tool, but there's so many more things that art can offer. And also I do say, and I said this earlier too, but when I talk about art, I'm talking about music and performance as well, you know, all different kinds of art, not just visual art, although that is more of what I studied. So some of the things that I saw art can do is it can inspire. So not only can it inspire us to, you know, make a difference in our communities, but it can also inspire us to think in new ways and, you know, change. So yeah. One of the places that I really saw this was in Zambia, where I was working in a pretty rural community and just, you know, spending time with different artists who are using the materials they have to make sculptures or illustrations or whatever. Whatever they want to create. And so there were a lot of people who were using what, you know, in the US, I would say a lot of people would consider to be trash. And, you know, so like recycled cans or old machine parts or even just, you know, empty chip containers, things like that, chip bags. And there were a lot of people who were making art out of these materials because, one, there were not the recycling facilities in place to recycle those things, and two, they just kind of ended up on the side of the road. And mm-hmm. that, you know, seeing how creative these people are inspired me to think, you know, how can I use these materials in different ways? And that doesn't just apply to the art sphere, that applies to, you know, any world that we live in, right? So how can you reuse or reconsider the way that you think about different items or different contexts? You know, there's a lot to go from there. So art can inspire. I'll talk your ear off about this. I'll try not to, but art can inspire. It can also disrupt. And this was actually an example that I saw on the Peace Boat, where we stopped in Iceland, and we on the Peace Boat, we met with some different community stakeholders who are focused on ending whaling in Iceland, which mm-hmm. is about 200 fin whales, which are the second largest whale in the world, are hunted every year. And the majority of that is actually shipped to Japan for food. But it's not actually, you know, used by, there's not indigenous people in Iceland, according to some of the groups that we spoke with. And they're not actually, like, no one's actually eating the food in Iceland, the whale in Iceland. So it's mostly for sport. And there's a group that we spoke with there, and they are trying to get whaling banned using documentary footage, and then also partnering with musicians like Bjork. And because of their efforts, they mm-hmm. were able to get a temporary banning on whaling this summer, which was right when we were there. And it was really just an interesting time to be in Iceland. And then although the government has allowed Iceland to continue whaling, they have put more restrictions on, you know, how to properly hunt whales, these fin whales, and make sure that they're not, you know, it's a more humane process. So I can talk about more of the ways that art can have an impact, but those are two stories for now.
Yeah, but those were two very, very, very solid examples. And, you know, when you were giving the first one, like, instantly, the first thing that came to my mind was, like, one man's trash is the next yeah. man's treasure kind of vibe. But, yeah, I love how you said, you know, that it could inspire you to, like, just think differently about how we see certain materials or objects, etc., not just in the form of, you know, your traditional sense of recycling, but just like how else can we give this product a second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth life instead of it just ending up in our landfills? And I feel like that is definitely part of the circular economy and, you know, the mindset that we need to have moving forward, because right now we live in a world where it's just like created, use once and then set aside for waste, you know, and we need to change that system in a very big way. And if it is, and we have all these different things out there, but art is definitely a tool. And like you said, not just painting or drawing, your traditional sense of the word art, mm-hmm. but all the creative elements that fall underneath that to like really help us, you know, open our minds and see things completely differently.
And it's funny too, because I had never really, I'd always wanted to work with sculpture and, you know, using recycled materials, and honestly was discouraged from it when I was studying in college, because I had studied painting and drawing mostly, and my professors were like, well, you should focus on painting and drawing. Mm-hmm. And so there was always this area that I was really interested in and hadn't been able to explore much, or hadn't, you know, made the time to explore. And so after seeing all of these creative sculptures and, you know, little items and necklaces and things all made from repurposed materials, I was in Taiwan for the fellowship, and had approached a creative residency there and said, you know, I really would love to work with you. I'd love to make a mural or whatever it is that you're interested in. And they said, you know, we're happy to have you. We'd love to have you, but would you like to make costumes using recycled materials? And I was like, well, I've never done that before. But absolutely, I'll be there. So then I spent about 5 weeks working for this festival. It's called the Taiwan's Dream Community Festival. And I worked with a woman there who was had been working using trash and recycled materials for the last 10 years to make costumes. And, you know, she didn't speak really any English, and my Mandarin was, you know, not great, but I'm pretty rusty. But I just got to spend about 5 weeks, and she was kind of my mentor. And I was able to then create about 5 costumes from trash materials. And I'm sure that wouldn't have happened had I not seen, you know, and been so inspired by the work that I'd seen in Zambia.
Wow. Like, just like seeing mm-hmm. how all these different things connected to, you know, and like how you wouldn't, and this is something that a team that came up on like the first episode, where it's just like stepping out of your comfort zone, you know, opening up your mind, and you might be thinking that you're on one set solid path and all these different things might pique your interest, and you're like, no, well, I was actually focused on just drawing and painting, so I don't want to explore that. But you know, like, that was not your case, you know. You was like, I've never done that before, but
absolutely,
I'm gonna go for it, I'm gonna try, let's see what happens here. And like, you clearly came out very much successful with a whole new skill, with a whole new appreciation, with a whole new mindset and understanding of how it is we could possibly make, you know, other festivals more sustainable just by having costumes made from, I don't want to say trash, because it's such
a negative word.
But
it's also,
you know,
okay to recognize, you know, yeah, I guess you're right. It's a judgment factor, but it's an interesting question. I've, you know, last thing I'll say on this too is, since coming back to the States, I've been exploring more opportunities to either, you know, teach workshops around that. And so I'm going to be teaching a workshop mm-hmm. next week about using, for George Washington University, about using trash to make hats. And I've learned too, I was talking to TerraCycle, which is a company that recycles a lot of products that are not normally easy to recycle. And not only is there the trash mm-hmm. component, you know, after like post-consumer trash component. So, you know, once you eat a bag of Doritos, that chip bag is then thrown out. There's also a pre-consumer trash component, where a lot of wrappers and things don't actually make it to the consumers because they have a roll that's used each day. And then whatever's left over is then just thrown out, even if it's, you know, not a finished roll. So I'm hoping to work with them. I'm going to, you know, in a few months, hopefully once I get my plan together and get my act together, I'll be working with pre-consumer trash to make more costumes and pieces of art, which is really interesting. And I'm excited to look at trash from a different perspective. So also quite scary.
Yeah. that pre-consumer trash, right, is something that I haven't, yeah, even really thought about, like, in a big way. And I'm sure so much people as well haven't really. And that just, like, brings it back to the whole, you know, your, mm-hmm, understanding of the supply chain and where things come from, and, like, all the different unsustainable practices that occur within the supply chain. Like, what we have is just the end product. You know, that's all we see, that's what we know of, but there's so much that goes into that entire process before, yep, you have the end product. And it's like, that's something that we, because again, as with so many other different environmental things, that is something that is out of sight, right? So it's out of mind, it's not part of our realities, we're not interacting with that process on a daily basis, so we're not really thinking about it. But I love that that's a field that, you know, that's like almost kind of very niche, so I love that that's something that you're also diving into, because I feel like that's so interesting and you're bringing the creative elements into it, which is absolutely wonderful. And as you mentioned, having a workshop
next week. Yeah, we're still finalizing, like you said, right, and whatnot, but I'm gonna try and teach a workshop on how to make bucket hats from milk cartons, so stay tuned.
That's so interesting. Like, as soon as you make them, please post it right away. Like, I would love to see that, right? But as we're talking about workshops, I feel like now would be a good time to pivot a little bit, because I know you had workshops on board the Peace Boat, so we can talk about the Arctic Voyage now. So, like I mentioned, this is the Youth for the SDGs special edition series, and as you all know, if you've been following the season so far, I've been on the Latin American Voyage, and the other two that we've interviewed was on the Latin American Voyage, but now we're talking about the Arctic Voyage with Amy. We're not going to argue about which one was better.
Absolutely,
you know, they were both equally great, right? And, but the Arctic Voyage was from May 24th to June 14th, and that was from London, Norway, and Iceland. Am I correct? Yes. Yeah, so, and well, like I mentioned, you had workshops on board the ship, so I would love to know more about the workshop that you conducted, and then what was one workshop that really stood out to you from one of the other participants?
So I ended up leading two different workshops, and I'll describe them both briefly. So the one was, you know, focused on, you know, how art can be a tool for oceans, because that's what we really focused on. So I gave a little presentation kind of similarly to what we just talked about, and talked about what I'd seen, or the ways that I'd seen art can be a tool for, like, environmental and ocean activism. And then I led a guided meditation and facilitated a creative workshop. So over the course of this year, I've gotten really into facilitating community art projects and murals. And we didn't have, you know, the space or like a big canvas or type thing to make a group mural. But what we did was I led a little guided meditation focused on what we want the ocean to look like in 2100. And so it's kind of like, what do you want? You know, what do you want to smell like? What do you want to see? What do you hear? What do you taste? You know, and this was with all of the other youth activists and then some other participants as well. And so it was really exciting to see what these youth activists are doing, because, or what they created, because they are experts in ocean literacy and ocean conservation and whatnot all around the world. And so we had about, you know, 2 hours or something to go through that meditation, and then they make the art, and they all got up and shared what they, like, what their dream is for the future of the ocean. And it's all based on the idea that if you don't know where you want to go, how are you going to get there? So, in, you know, how art can inspire, I think it can also help us to imagine new futures and ways of being. And a lot of what I hear, at least, and a lot of what a lot of us hear in the climate space is ocean degradation and ocean acidification and, you know, the loss of marine life and overfishing and all of these really depressing narratives. And those are, you know, that is our reality. But where do we want the ocean to be in 2100? And what do we want the ocean to look like? And once we know that, then we can try and, you know, figure out the steps in order to get there. So that was the main workshop that I led. And then the second one was just talking about Youthtopia, which is an organization that I worked for when I was in Indonesia as part of my fellowship. And was talking about the Circle of Youth Members, which is a part of their group. It's all about empowering youth activists around the world to make a difference in their communities. And so I led a quick workshop about that and kind of, you know, gave the youth activists the tools to be able to connect with Utopia if they were interested. So those are my workshops. And then I can tell you about other ones. I think it's so hard to say one workshop because there were so many really interesting ones. Did you want me to pick one from the other youth on my trip, or did you want me to pick one from, you know, any of the visitors that we had? Because I can think of one of a visitor, and I can try and think of.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't want to pick favorites from the other ambassadors. I feel like they might not like that. but if they're listening, they were all great.
Yeah, you could pick one from a visitor, but you could, if you don't want to pick favorites amongst the other youth that was on your voyage, which is so very interesting because, like, on the two that we had so far from the Latin American voyage, they didn't even hesitate. But you could probably pick one that was different, or you felt like you learned the most from it because it was not a field that you were, I don't know, like accustomed learning about or hearing. So for example, on our trip, you know, we had a lot of different people working on different SDGs, right? So for the most part, we had climate change people, but then there was somebody who gave a workshop on like positive peace and what that means, etc. Or we also had one on the history of Guatemala, etc., and the political context and things. So like that was something that was different that like really stood out to people, where they found that like they learned a lot because they weren't really familiar with that topic. So if there was something like that on your voyage as well, or I don't know, whatever you feel like sharing, girl, this is your space.
All right, well, I will share. I think there were so many in terms of our partnerships. Emily did an incredible job of connecting us with, you know, so many different organizations at each of the places that we docked at. And it's really hard to pick a favorite from there. You're asking for specifically on the boat, though, right?
Yeah.
I mentioned the Sea Vault earlier, and I had done some research into Svalbard before being able to go there. And so for those of you who don't know, Svalbard is one of the northernmost inhabited I guess like colonies or, you know, little cities, I guess towns, you could say, probably just a town. Northernmost inhabited towns in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason why we had the polar bear stuffed animal was because they, according to Google, have more polar bears than humans. So I was really, really hopeful to see polar bears, and I was also really excited to get to learn more about the Sea Vault, because that's one of the things that Svalbard is known for. So Asgard went and was on the peace boat, and we got to chat with him. We had a nice little private conversation with him, and he told us all about the Sea Vault and its origins and what is the difference between a Sea Vault and a seed bank, and, you know, how certain seeds are able to get into the Seed Vault. So essentially, all the seeds that go to the Seed Vault in Svalbard have to be public. They can't be any trademark seeds, and so non-GMO, they're all essentially non-GMO. And it was just really interesting hearing about how they take care of the Seed Vault, how they're working to ensure that it will stay below freezing, even with climate change and permafrost thaw and all of those things. So that was a really interesting lecture.
Before you continue, sorry, that is like just so cool and interesting. That's something that I wish we could have experienced that, because, like, you know, there have been so many movies out there that touches on, you know, the Seed Vault and, you know, this being existence, so that if it is the world comes to an end, we still have, you know, the seeds to be able to bring food or produce agriculture, blah 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 blah, as the list goes on and stuff. But like hearing about it and, you know, like being in the same area, like that's very interesting. And apart from it being interesting, let me just highlight, like, like you mentioned it before you started, like, Emily does a really great job. And Emily's the director of Peace Boat US and the person behind this Youth for the SDGs program. But she does a really good job at creating spaces that we as youth mm-hmm. would not be in.
Yeah.
In any circumstances possible. Because, like, when else would you be in a space, you know, to be learning about that from one of the people working on it,
etc.? No, Asman, like, as well as you, yeah. very high up in the Seed Vault and has been there for a really long time. So to be able to have that conversation with mm-hmm. him was pretty record-breaking for me. I was like, this is awesome. I think I was probably the most excited person in the group, and I think I asked way too many questions. Everyone was like, when is she gonna stop asking questions? But I was having a great time, so. And then the second question. Mm-hmm. I think that Tony had a really interesting presentation because she talked about the Palau Pledge. And so Tony is from Palau, which is, you know, a small, I feel like I'm going to totally mess this up. It's a small island or group of islands, I believe, right? Kind of near Taiwan. Mm-hmm. And she, you haven't been to Palau. I know they had like an ocean conference a few years ago.
No, I haven't been to Palau.
And so she talked about the Palau Pledge, which I'm going to try not to butcher it because now this information is, you know, several months old. But it was really, really interesting hearing about how Palau basically requires all visitors to sign a pledge in their passport saying mm-hmm. that they are going to limit, you know, their environmental footprint. And essentially, you know, the only footprint that I'm going to leave in Palau are those that I like are, you know, in the trail behind me, essentially. It's much nicer than what I just said, but you get the idea. And so she talked about the Palau National Marine Sanctuary and how it's one of the largest no-take marine protected areas in the world. She had us do a little trivia mm-hmm. about it and, you know, talked about some of the challenges, too, of the marine sanctuary. And then at the end, she gave us all our own little Palau pledge and we got to sign it, which was really special. And then it inspired us so much that later on in the trip, we ended up doing a version of the Palau Pledge for the Peace Boat. And so we made our own Peace Boat Pledge, essentially. And that was a lot of fun, too. And so I think that was definitely one of my favorite workshops.
Oh, my gosh. I remember the first time I learned about the Palau Pledge. And I was just like, I actually first learned about it on the Peace Boat. So, yeah. This was my second time being on the boat participating in the program. The first time I was part of the Ocean and Climate Youth Ambassadors program, and we had mm-hmm. somebody from Palau LC, and she'd work on the creation of the Palau Pledge, and she was like telling us all about it, and I was just like, this is so great. Like, what a good way to Absolutely. Encourage sustainable tourism, and, you know, for people to keep themselves accountable, because you're essentially a visitor in someone else's land, and there's a lot of times when tourists, you know, they come and they take advantage of the natural resources, and example, previously in Tobago, which is the sister isle of Trinidad, you know, it was a norm for people to break mm-hmm. off a piece wow. of the coral reef and take it back home as like a souvenir, right? As wild as that is, right? So, you know, having something like the Palau Pledge makes it, you know, you're there to see, you're there to, you know, mm-hmm. appreciate, you're there to learn, but make sure you leave the place cleaner than you met yeah. it in a nutshell, so that the locals and, you know, general public could enjoy their lovely environment that gives them all the resources that they need. So I feel like I'm so glad that you touched on that, because I feel like that was something that really stood out to me on the ship the first time I heard about it as well. And it's also very That's creative true, yeah. too. So
I pulled it up too. If you want me to, read it, you can always, you know, share it later.
Please read it out for our guests so they connect with it even more. Palau,
I take this pledge as your guest to preserve and protect your beautiful and unique island home. I vow to tread lightly, act kindly, and explore mindfully. I shall not take what is not given. I shall not harm what does not harm me. The only footprints I shall leave are those that will wash away. And then you sign at the bottom. So it's very cute. I believe that it was written either like with the children in mind or by the children, you know, something we'll have to look this up later. But it's very special. Mm-hmm. So I love that you also, you know, learned about that on the Peace Boat. That's wonderful.
Great place to learn, to connect, to grow, to expand, to think differently, to build a mm-hmm. family, etc. And I know I didn't touch on this, but I don't have an idea of how many, well, actually I could just look it up on Peace Boat's website, but for you share. I would love to know how much youth participants took part in your Arctic voyage and where they were all from.
That's a great question. So we have Patty and Mafe were from Panama. So you've got two from Panama. And then Tony was from Palau. And then we had Monique, who's from St. Lucia. And I'm trying to think who else we had. We had Sienna, who's from the Cook Islands, and Winton, who's also from the Cook Islands. And then Nico, who is from Argentina. Yuki from Japan, and Zuzana from mm-hmm. Poland, I think. And Mitchell, who's from Hawaii. And has lived in New Zealand as well. I think that's everyone. Yeah, and then me from the US. So
I was like, can you imagine if you left somebody out and they heard this episode?
Oh my goodness, that would be so terrible. I don't know if you're counting, but I think I got them all. So, and Luis, okay, great.
Well, no, I definitely wasn't counting.
And Luis is from Colombia, and he was our photographer.
Nice, which is like so interesting to hear those countries that came together. You know, you mentioned Palau, you mentioned Poland, you mentioned Cook Islands, you mentioned New Zealand, we have USA,
Argentina,
St. Lucia, like the combination of Argentina, all these different youths coming together. And for a shared mission, you know, all about protecting the ocean and taking climate action, etc. Like, it's such a beautiful experience because sometimes, you know, we feel like we might be in this fight alone, or this is something that is just mm-hmm. related to us, you know, like these problems are just happening here, etc. But like, just, you know, having that network, like how they say, find your tribe when you're in this field, etc. Like, like Peace Boat does a really good job at connecting you to like-minded youths that you stay connected to forever and forever.
I was talking to one of my friends from the Peace Boat, you know, just messaging, but no, today. So I was like, this is so nice. And I know that you all have kept in touch too with your different, your two different expeditions now too. So that's wonderful.
Yeah. And before we wrap things up, I would love for you to share any advice you have for young people interested in getting into the field of let's go with artivism.
I think this is going to be a bit cliche and generic, but I do think that it's those two things for a reason, because it holds. So I think that, you know, there is room for you in this space. We need all hands on deck, and you know, you don't have to, your artivism doesn't have to look like anybody else's, right? I think the more voices that we have in this space, the more mm-hmm. people that are thinking about these topics and, you know, making art or making music or whatever it is about these topics, the better. One of the things that I've found to be really helpful is doing art in communion with others, because, you know, after spending a whole year pretty much exclusively focused on the climate crisis, it can be really hard. And, you know, environmental and ocean degradation, whatnot. I found that some of my favorite moments were when I was working with other people to make art, and just, mm-hmm. it didn't have to be focused on the ocean or the climate. It could just be, you know, let's just sit together on this picnic table and draw on this spare paper together that I have. And, you never really know what impact you may have on other people from that. So, one example was I did that exact thing where I brought a bunch of people together and said, anybody who wants to make art can make art with us. And, you know, just come join us on this shared fabric that we have. And it doesn't matter. You don't have to be an artist. Just have fun. And, it wasn't at all about climate mm-hmm. or ocean or anything like that. And then I left, and that was, I left, the country and, you know, went on to another part of my research. And a few weeks later, I heard from a friend that had been there that night, and she said, hey, like, you know, we miss you, and we're doing this art night again, because you inspired us, and, like, we want to make another art, you know, shared tapestry together, essentially. And I was like, that is so lovely. And I didn't realize that that was having an impact on people and that they would then want to do it again. And none of these people would really consider themselves to be artists. So I guess, like, you know, if you are a creative person, just keep doing whatever you're interested in. And, you know, I'm sure that you will connect with other people who are also thinking along those lines. So, and, you know, tell me about it. I want to hear. I want to see what you're up to. the more people, the merrier. So,
yeah, I really, really like that, you know, because you mentioned, like, art as a tool to educate, to raise awareness, to disrupt the status quo. And now you're talking about art as a tool to create community, like, which is so important and so special and so very much needed. So, Amy, with that, I would love for you to share with our guests, because you mentioned it. But I mean, I was going to say this anyways, but I would love for you to share with our listeners how they could connect with you on social media. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So I'm on Instagram at Amy Spencer Art, AmySpencerArt. And then I'm also I have a website as well, which is www.amyspencerharf. So I don't know if you want to just put that in the show notes or something like that. But amyspencerharf.com. And, you know, that has my email on there as well. But yeah, I'd love to, you know, to chat with anyone who's interested about exploring the world of art and artivism. And also, I'm always looking to collaborate with other creatives in the world. So this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I am so inspired. and it's been great to connect with you.
Yeah, I could not have said that any better, because I feel the exact same way. And oh my God, something popped into my head while you were giving your socials and I forgot. Oh, I remember. I was going to say that our journey definitely does not end here, because like I mentioned, I'm always putting on all these different creative shows and spaces and elements and seeing if this is your thing. You know, I would love in the future for us to collaborate in some form or fashion. I think
I would love to
definitely make that happen, whether it be through Peace Boat or, you know, through with Eco Vibes or anything like that.
Yes.
We will make it happen. And then when it does happen, guys, just remember that you hit it
on this show on today. Eco Vibes podcast. Love it.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much, Khadija. Yeah. I appreciate it. And I'm excited for our future collaborations.
Absolutely. So guys, make sure and connect with Amy. Like she mentioned, I would have everything in the show notes. And if you enjoyed this episode, make sure and give the Eco Vibes podcast some love. Follow us on Spotify. Give us some likes. Give us some shares. All that good stuff. And this is the Youth for the SDGs series in partnership with Peace Boat US for the UN Ocean Decade of Science. We have a lot more youth to come. We're going to be talking with Danielle from Peru, Monique from St. Lucia, and they're all going to be sharing on their respective areas of expertise, as well as their experience on the voyage as well. So looking forward to interviewing more youth, bringing you more great episodes. And with that, I will see y'all in the next one. So bye, everyone.
Bye. That was so fun. It was really exciting to hear more about you.